Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Good Sunday morning to you. I'm Jeff Meller, along with Brian Hanley, inside the old National Bank studio here on State Street. Far cry from the weather we were getting last Sunday. Brian, it is bright and sunny out inside studio today,
man. Oh, it's sunny.
Definitely better than the buckets of rain that were coming down last Sunday before the Grant Park 220. Do want to touch on that a little bit later. Of course, we will always talk baseball in the middle of summer, but surprise, surprise, did not necessarily anticipate this. Northwestern football has moved into the lead story because, not for good reasons, Brian.
No, it's a story that I guess became public on Friday, and the Daily Northwestern, and Northwestern is obviously known for its journalism school and the journalism graduates who go on to very good careers, and they uncovered and published the first of what has been a series of stories now about alleged hazing incidents that include allegations that upperclassmen on the team would victimize, sexualize hazing of freshmen in particular. More often than not, it was, and the excuse or the rationale was team building. But it's truly stuff that when you read the details of the Daily Northwestern, it's out certainly on social media. The Sun-Times Tribune have written stories. We're going to talk to Adam Rittenberg from ESPN, college guru from ESPN and ESPN.com. And Adam was actually a student journalist at the Daily Northwestern when I was covering Northwestern back in the day. So Adam's gone on to a very good career, and he wrote an updated story last night because the university came out with a two-week suspension of Pat Fitzgerald, the head football coach of the Wildcats, after an in-house investigation that they commissioned, and more than one student-athlete or former student-athlete, a couple of people, and the Sun-Times actually had a third and fourth, also confirm most of the allegations or the gist of the story that the Daily Northwestern broke. But their investigation in-house, the university's, came up with the fact that they believe most of the allegations could be substantiated. However, they could not draw a direct line from what happened inside the locker room and also at the training camp up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And the NU football team has been going up there prior to seasons since probably for 20 years now, back to when I was covering them.
And part of the reason we're diving right into this at the start of the show is because, as you mentioned, the note from University President Michael Schill yesterday, last night, sent a letter to the Northwestern community, and he wrote, quote, that he may have erred in weighing the appropriate sanction. You said a two-week unpaid suspension for Pat Fitzgerald, and they will no longer be allowed to go up to the Kenosha camp that they did during their preseason work. And Schill wrote that he spoke with players' families and apologized for what the players had gone through in the program. He also attempted to contact the former player whose allegations were detailed in that report that you mentioned in the Daily Northwestern. And it is, first of all, the initial thought on Friday was, boy, I always hate when a university or any entity comes out with an internal investigation and they're not going to give you the details of said report, right? Knowing people who have actually conducted internal investigations, I kind of know what can go into it. Sometimes you have to ask the question, okay, what does the entity really want stuff to be found, first and foremost?
If the Daily NU didn't publish the story, Pat might have been suspended for 2 weeks, and we might not have been aware of it.
Exactly.
And then the university and also the athletic department, as you alluded to, refused to answer any questions and issued their statements, and that's all we're going to do to protect the student-athletes and all those involved. But their investigation said that they, although they could basically confirm many of the allegations or substantiate them, rather, they could not say that Pat Fitzgerald and or his staff were aware of the hazing that was alleged. in both the locker room and also up at Kenosha, up at their camp. And so they, the university decided a two-week unpaid suspension for the head coach, Pat Fitzgerald, who's, by the way, has been the football coach there since 2006, was a decorated NU football player on the Rose Bowl team back in 1994.
It was a 95 season. 95, they played in the 1996 Rose Bowl.
Okay, and I, you know, Pat was the recruiting coordinator under Randy Walker and also the defensive coordinator under Randy Walker. And when Randy suddenly passed of a heart attack, they elevated Pat Fitzgerald to, at that time, the youngest. He was the youngest head coach in college football. And he's been there 17 years. And most people believe that, you know, Pat Fitzgerald is one of those straight-shooting guys. Mm-hmm. And he has been, and going back to 2014, he's been an advocate of zero tolerance for hazing. But now, as you mentioned, the president of Michael Schill writing to the Northwestern community that they're revisiting the penalty that they gave Pat Fitzgerald. And also two of the other sanctions for the team. No more trips to Kenosha for training camp.
Correct.
And there will be a locker room monitor in place who will not be part and will not report to the football staff, will report to someone else in the university. So basically, the report says you can't prove that the coaching staff and the head coach knew, but you're basically saying you don't trust them to run their program because you can't send them to Kenosha. Because that's allegedly where some of these incidents happened, and you can't trust them to run a locker room, which is problematic for any coach to have someone basically keeping eyes on you because you're not trustworthy right now.
For the longest time, you know, you mentioned, you know, Fitzgerald, the captain of the team in 1995, which, you know, that was really the first Northwestern football team that captured the imagination of the city.
Absolutely.
And I would still say, I haven't really looked at the history, but from just off of memory, I would say that's still by far and away Northwestern's most successful football season. Would you agree? Or, I mean, I know they've had some good runs under Pat Fitzgerald. They've had some successful seasons, but I don't think they've ever lived up to what they were doing that one season when they won the... And college football was a far different animal back then when bowls, you would win your conference and actually go to a bowl game. That's how they won the Big Ten and were able to go on and play USC, and Keyshawn Johnson famously went nuts and basically, you know, put them back in their place. But still, it was a great success for a team that had almost no expectations heading into that season. And Pat Fitzgerald was, you know, one of the faces of the actual players on that team when Gary Barnett was the coach. And now, years later, you laid out the timeline, him taking over for Randy Walker after his death. And then, for the most part, being a guy who, as a front-facing, you know, coach, was very, you know, was very put on a persona of somebody who was very likable. And oftentimes, I think Northwestern, the program, would be exalted for the student athletes that they recruited, and also use that as, without saying it directly, use that as an excuse for why they maybe couldn't necessarily compete with some of the other teams in the conference, your Ohio States and Michigans, because their students, they didn't want to say it directly, but they come here to play, and but also to go to the university, right? Saying it without saying it oftentimes. And Pat Fitzgerald, because his public persona was in the city, he was just a nice guy, a good guy, a guy who you thought, okay, I'd like to see, I'd love to have my kid go play college football for him. Well, now it is completely coming undone. You mentioned how he, in the past, has spoken out against hazing. I mean, that, I think, is going to be critical moving forward here. This is an old video that resurfaced, of course, yesterday. Pat Fitzgerald talking about zero tolerance for hazing at Northwestern.
When I think about the difficulties that every team has as they welcome new members into their families, one of the big issues that we've seen in college athletics and across the country is the hazing issues. Things that we believe here in Northwestern, number one, is there's a zero tolerance for hazing. There's no reason why to ever have it. I know there's a lot of initiations and traditions and things of that nature, and we had that here back, frankly, when I was a player in some different ways. But you know, as society's evolved and as we've really thought deep about how we want to welcome our new family members in to our programs and into our organizations, hazing should have nothing to do with it. Instead, how about thinking about in our context of what we do. Have a big brother program. Have an upperclassman or someone older within the team look after a younger player. Teach them the values. Teach them what it means to be a part of your culture. And give them every opportunity that they have to be successful in their initial stages of being a part of your family. Never forget what it was like to be that young person coming into a new environment. Here at the collegiate level, it's leaving the nest, leaving home, and coming into a new culture that you've never been a part of. You're afraid, you're scared, you have all these different things going through your mind about just how bad it's going to be. Hazing doesn't need to be a part of that issue. Let's turn it around the other way and give him a big brother and give him an opportunity to be successful.
So that's 2014, and Pat Fitzgerald was part of the Positive Coaching Alliance, which shot that video on a practice field at Northwestern all those years ago. And the fact of the matter is, the Daily Northwestern, writing this report and the series of articles on it, said that the hazing would be part of mostly freshmen. They made a mistake on the practice field or mm-hmm. camp or even during a game, and they would do the Shrek clap over their head to make someone aware to write their name down so that they would be allegedly taken care of with the hazing ritual.
Which was dubbed, quote, running.
Running. So and so Pat Fitzgerald denied on Friday in a statement that he had any knowledge of it. And back to the president of the university's statement yesterday, after they said they weren't going to further respond to inquiries about it, President Michael Schill said, in determining the appropriate penalty for the head coach, I focused too much on the report, what it concluded that he, Pat Fitzgerald, didn't know, and not enough on what he should have known. As the head coach of one of our athletic programs, Coach Fitzgerald is not only responsible for what happens within the program, but also must take great care to uphold our institutional commitment to the student experience. Clearly, he failed to uphold that commitment, and I failed to sufficiently consider that failure in levying a sanction. So he's going to consult with faculty and staff and some of the Board of Trustees mm-hmm. and apparently revisit the sanctions. And I would guess if you write a letter like that, the sanctions are going to increase. You don't write that letter to the Northwestern community and then it becomes public and then sit there with a two-week suspension. It just seems like there is going to be further sanctions coming Pat Fitzgerald's way. And some people on social media are wondering how far that goes.
Absolutely.
Does it go to termination?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the first conclusion I make is there's no doubt in my mind that at bare minimum, this will turn into an indefinite suspension. And at that point, like you said, the question is, will Pat Fitzgerald coach another game for Northwestern? Again, the details, you know, they're sorted details in the Daily Northwestern about what two anonymous players have laid out for you about the hazing rituals. And, you know, I think the damning paragraph for Pat Fitzgerald in particular is that he made the motion, as you mentioned, the Shrek clap in practice at times when freshmen would mess up or not, you know, not be able to do exactly what he was asking them to do. And it was clear, at least according to the anonymous people in this report, that Fitzgerald probably knew what was going on. And I think that's giving him more than the benefit of the doubt by saying probably.
Yeah, and also like yesterday after the president said they're going to revisit the sanctions, there was a statement put out by the football team, and Steve Greenberg, who does terrific work at the Sun-Times, said he was texted the statement, and the person who texted him the statement is a former player who's also on the football staff. And the statement read, "We do not tolerate hazing in any form. The entire Northwestern football team... hazing goes against our values of respect, integrity, personal growth. We are committed to fostering a supportive, inclusive environment. The allegations have been exaggerated and twisted into lies. These fabrications have been made with the intention of harming our program and tarnishing the reputation of our dedicated players and coaching staff. It is crucial to note that, parenthetically, Fitzgerald was not involved in any of the alleged incidents in any way, shape, or form. He had no knowledge of these allegations until they were brought to his attention during the investigation." So the team ostensibly is rallying around the head football coach, but the president of the university is saying, well, even if we can't say he did know, he should have known. And I will just throw this out there, having covered colleges for a decade back in the day when I was a sports writer of the Sun-Times, I never covered a college football coach who did not at least tell you he knew everything that went on within the on the field, within the locker room, and also basically in the private lives of his players. He was the czar.
Yes.
As many of them, more than a few of them, said to me, this isn't a democracy around here. It's my way or no way.
The quotes in the Daily Northwestern from the anonymous sources are indicting for Fitzgerald, and I will say that statements ring hollow to me. Fine. You can say whatever you want in paper. Bare minimum, I think Pat Fitzgerald needs to address this publicly if Northwestern truly has any intent on bringing him back. I don't want to hear some cursory, we addressed that in referring to some statement.
We're moving on.
We're moving on. That's in the past. This is a damning indictment, accusations that are being made against you. You should come out publicly, and if they're truly false, as that statement from the football team said, then come out and address them head on and deny it like hell, if that is truly your position. Because a simple statement, it rings hollow to me.
Well, and you're going to have to address it on the recruiting trail if you're still employed as the head coach of the Northwestern football team.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people you're going to have to address, parents and prospective students. And believe me, there'll be negative recruiting going on. And if a prospect is considering Northwestern and Michigan State, if you want to stay in the Big, just using example, you believe me, other coaches are going to say, hey, you know what's going on at Northwestern. You probably don't want any part of that right now until they figure it out.
Yeah, so it's a big mess right now up at Northwestern. We'll talk about it again. Paul Sullivan's going to join us at 9:30. Adam Rittenberg will jump on at 10 o'clock. He wrote an updated story for ESPN.com about this, so we'll pick his brain. And as Brian mentioned, a Northwestern alum as well. So lots to do here on Meller and Hanley. We will talk with you as well. 312-332-3776. This is ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Meller and Hanley hanging out with you on Sunday morning until 11 o'clock. We'll talk a little bit of baseball in about 10 minutes with Paul Sullivan, recapping another lousy day.
We were going to open the show with the montage of offensive highlights from Cubs Sox yesterday. I think it would have taken the first hour of the show. Maybe not. I'm trying to put this season in perspective for both sides of town. Usually, if you're having bad baseball, it's one side of town. The other side is either doing just fine, thank you, or meandering along in the middle of the pack. But given what the expectations were, certainly on the south side of town with the Chicago White Sox, with the new manager and promises of the offseason of a change in attitude and approach and accountability, and here we sit again with the White Sox scuffling big time. And then on the north side of town, you don't know if you had, you know, Cubs win six, they lose six. It's just you just don't know what to make of either of it, because there was a month or so ago where you thought the Cubs couldn't make noise in a very winnable division, and they just can't find a way to get out of their own way.
Yeah, they're That run differential, you can't keep clinging to that when you're eight games out of first place. And then for the White Sox, they're 15 games under 500 and also eight games back in their division, their heinous division. So we'll talk with Paul Sullivan in about 10 minutes about our baseball teams. But a little more on Northwestern, because, of course, right now, Pat Fitzgerald's, I think his career at Northwestern hangs in the balance right now. We're trying to sort through some pretty heinous details that were released in the Daily Northwestern story yesterday, the school's student newspaper, which described the hazing practice characterized as, quote, running. And the details are in the story. It's a Sunday morning, so Brian, I don't really want to put that out there for the folks out there who may be driving around with their kids, but it's a pretty nasty hazing story that you've probably come similar stories you've seen in the past, and accusations that Pat Fitzgerald was at least aware, and in some of the quotes here, you know, likely he was signaling as well to which players should be, quote, run. So, you know, for a guy who pledged that hazing, there was no, you know, had a zero tolerance at his university, and that should be the case around football, for less than 10 years later, for that, you know, to emerge, I mean, beyond hypocritical here, it's a terrible look. And I think if he has any real chance of retaining his job, I think he's going to have to come out publicly and deny the allegations and go through a press conference and at least publicly try and plead his innocence. Now, whether or not people will believe him, that's up for them to decide. But this is a terrible look, and I don't think you can just get by putting a statement out, serving a mere 2 weeks unpaid suspension, and then in the middle of summer, by the way, and then just move about it and push it, you know, sweep it under the rug. I think Northwestern, at least especially the university they purport to be, I think they need their head football coach, if he's going to come back, to prove that this is these accusations are not true, at least to the best of his ability.
Yeah, and Pat Fitzgerald did put out a statement Friday, and again, he had, to your point, Jeff, he hasn't answered any questions, made himself available. As a matter of fact, his agent, Brian Harlan, who's a Chicago guy and is well known and respected, said that Pat's response in statement is his statement, but this was Pat's statement. Northwestern football prides itself on producing not just athletes, but fine young men with character benefiting the program and our university, Fitzgerald said in a statement. We hold our student athletes and our program to the highest standards. We will continue to work to exceed those standards moving forward. Denied that he had any knowledge of the allegations and said he was disappointed. But now back to the president of the university, said, well, that's what the report said. We couldn't say that he did know, but the president apparently is now landing on the fact that he should have known, and that ignorance is not going to be a defense that's going to stand up in Evanston. So we'll see. We'll see how it moves forward. But if he didn't know, I don't know that that gives him less culpability. You should know.
Yeah, and to your point, you mentioned it. Every college football coach out there, it seems to be at worst in college football of all college athletics. There's a God complex that goes on with a lot of the football coaches. And to your point, they like to let you know that they run the program and it starts and ends with them. And so it's going to strain credulity if Pat Fitzgerald continues to stick by his statement that he was unaware of this occurring, especially when you have, again, in that quote, that he was the one actually performing the Shrek clap, as it was, which again would indicate that that player would be put through running.
When Randy Walker was the head coach of the football team and Pat was on his staff, Randy would have the leadership council, which would be upperclassmen, and they would meet, I believe, on a weekly basis. I think they had dinner at Randy's house, because he wanted to know what were any issues that the team had, what mm-hmm. did the leaders believe that the team needed. You know, they were eyes and ears. It's not novel to Randy Walker nor Northwestern at the time. I assume Pat, being on the staff of Randy Walker, would have inherited the same type of thing, if not exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most college football coaches, as much as they are the czar and believe they have their fingerprints on every aspect of the program, in the locker room, on the field, and off the field, they need, you know, they want to have that communication. They want also their players to buy in. So I can't imagine, and then look, that we read the entire team, and entire was all in cap letters on the entire team statement, saying we signed this as in the entire team, saying that Pat Fitzgerald had no knowledge of any of this, and that the allegations have been twisted and exaggerated and fabricated, and complete 180 from what the university investigation apparently found. And Adam Rittenberg will help sort through this with us in a little bit here.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, I can't imagine that the report did say, the university report said, there was certainly time and places which the staff could have discovered what was going on and probably should have discovered what was going on.
The entire football team doth protest too much, methinks, Brian. But we will get back to it with Adam Rittenberg at 10 o'clock. Turn our attention a little bit to baseball here. Paul Sullivan will join us next here on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Jeff Miller, Brian Hanley, hanging out with you till 11 o'clock today. Hopefully you're enjoying your Sunday morning, despite the fact that our baseball teams are not helping bring joy to their fan bases these days. Doesn't matter. They're both eight games back. It's like they're competing, Brian, to see if they could stay with each other in their division. Games back.
You know what they need, Sully? They need a midseason tournament to get the juices flowing again. That's what they need.
Brian mentioned Sully. We bring in Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune. Sully, how's it going, man?
Oh, beautiful.
For spacious skies.
Sully, how are you guys?
Oh, other than the baseball season seemingly is over. Put it in perspective for us. I mean, you're the dean of baseball scribes in this town. I'm scratching my head trying to figure out, you know, the Cubs can start 0-14 or they can win World Series. When both teams are where they're at currently going into the All-Star break and it's just a kind of meh, kind of a blah. No one, I mean, have we suffered through a season like this recently or at any time?
When they're both bad and still in the race, I don't remember that. There's been years when both were way worse than this record-wise, but I think this year to me is different because it's so frustrating that, you know, the Cubs did. They may not have spent as much as people would have liked, but they did spend $300 million in the offseason on free agents. And so you were expecting a little bit more than this. And the White Sox obviously didn't make a lot of moves in the offseason, but everyone figured, well, with Tony La Russa gone, maybe they would get back to the team that they were back a couple years ago when they made the playoffs, or at least close to it. And they haven't obviously been anywhere near that. So. It's a very frustrating season, and the fact that they're still both, you know, quote, in contention, unquote, even makes it worse because, you know, usually we could just write them off and go on to the Bears at this point. But technically, you know, they both still have a shot.
$300 million doesn't go quite as far as it used to, huh, Brian? Sully, all right, so the Cubs are in New York, and you mentioned the other day in your article in the Trib that Cody Bellinger, you know, could be auditioning for the Yankees, who have been scuffling along offensively since Aaron Jones hit the injured list. I guess that makes sense because he's only here on a one-year deal, but Marcus Stroman also is set to be a free agent. So I think those are the two biggest names Cub fans are kind of looking at and watching. What is Jed Hoyer actually going to do here? Because it seems like they want to pretend like they're in the race, but eight games back, despite your run differential, that's quite a hurdle to overcome here.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, like you said, those two guys would be the main chips because Marcus has an opt-out and everyone's pretty sure he's going to do that because he's having a good season. Bellinger actually has an option for next year. It's a mutual option, but no one expects him to do that because he's having a decent season and, you know, Scott Boras is his agent, so he's likely to at least, you know, go on the market and see what he can get, even if he doesn't want to come back. So those are his two biggest moves. There are obviously some other guys that will be free agents and other guys that can be traded, but it's a tough call. I mean, you have to wonder whether the Reds have staying power. It sure looks like it the last month or month and a half since they brought up Ellie De La Cruz, just an outstanding player, but their pitching is really not that good. And we just saw the Brewers. I don't think they're significantly better than the Cubs. They have good pitching, obviously, but their lineup isn't, you know, scary at all. So I think if they get within maybe four or five games by August 1st, they would probably be buyers, but who knows.
And when you look at the south side of town, and you wrote a column on Lucas Giolito today in the Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, And he's saying all the right things, and he seems sincere that he'd like to be here, and he loves the city and all. But he's having his ERA in the last 13 outings, just a shade over 3. He's having a wonderful season, bounce back season. They didn't make a commitment to him. He can be a free agent. It sure seems like, I know Rick Hahn every Monday now meets with the media and says, you know, the obvious that we could be buyers, we could be sellers. We still have time to let that all play out. But I think it's all played out. Beyond Lucas Giolito, we were talking last week, Jeff and I, about Tim Anderson's option at the end of the season. You would think it was a no-brainer. He'd pick it up for $12.5 million. I assume if Rick Hahn's making that decision, he's going to make the obvious decision and keep bringing him back. But is that such a no-brainer at this point?
Yeah, I would think that they would do that because just based on his track record and, you know, obviously he is having a bad season. He hasn't homered in about a year, it looks like, at this point. I know it was mid-July. I can't remember the exact date. But if you don't pick up the option and you get nothing and he gets away and, you know, returns to form somewhere else, that's really going to look bad for the Sox. So I think they have to kind of bite the bullet and do that. Lance Lynn should be a goner really quickly, and especially after an outing like he had the other day. Mm-hmm. If they can get anything for Clevenger, definitely he's gone. Joe Kelly, you know, just got injured, unfortunately, again, so that's going to be difficult. But, you know, I don't know what else they can do but just start selling off these players because – and it's not really – Rick Hahn is not like Jed Hoyer in that he – Jed seemed to really relish the sell-off a couple of years ago. I don't think Rick liked doing stuff like that. We've never seen him have a major sell-off, but if any team is calling for one, it's certainly this one. If Jerry Reinsdorf is satisfied that these guys are all trying their best and grinding and blah, 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 you know, then he's just deluded.
I mean, listen, if you're Rick Hahn, the job security that a Jerry Reinsdorf organization provides is great. But the counterpoint, I guess, is that you're always going to be hindered by, you know, what your owner wants to spend. And Sully, you know, it feels like, as an observer of the Sox, it feels like, boy, this championship window that they thought would be open for quite a few years, like at the very least they're going to have to renovate how they go about it, because if they do indeed, as you said, are probably the prudent moves, trade Lance Lynn, trade Lucas Giolito, all of a sudden, you know, everything hinges on Dylan Cease getting back to last year's form, Michael Kopech finally realizing his potential, and everything's got to be built about around Luis Robert, which is, you've got a few nice pieces, but man, baseball, it's a 26-man roster. You need depth, and the White Sox organization has never really had it. How quickly, you know, if they trade away Giolito and Lynn, can they actually turn this team into a competitor?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, they don't have much in the minor leagues coming up, as we've seen the guys that they've brought up, you know, Colas and Zach, you know, decent, maybe a little contributing here and there, but neither has stood out. And you got Elvis, he's an old guy at second. No one has any faith in Moncada, let's face it, that he's going to not be injured. Eloy has probably been injury free for like a month now, like maybe the longest stretch we can remember with him.
Shh, don't jinx
so,
it.
Grandal, there's no catching Grandal, you know, he's gone. And Debbie, decent player, but not much offense there. So that, yeah, they have so many holes, and if they start unloading, it's going to be another rebuild. That I don't know how, what other way they can talk themselves about doing it. And you know, Jed wouldn't call it a rebuild on the north side, but that's what he did, and I think the Sox would have to do the same thing.
And we're here on the just hours away from the baseball draft, but obviously the baseball draft takes years for it to produce most any player that you'll see at the major league level. It's not like the NBA, obviously. So when you look at if Giolito is moved, and I think he will be, like you said today in your column, you're down to Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech, and we already know that they kind of watch Michael Kopech in his innings and you know, his time off. And So do you even have two right now to build a rotation around?
Yeah, that's a good question. Kopech, very frustrating because, you know, sometimes he goes out there and he looks like he's going to throw a no-hitter. He's got that kind of stuff. And then other times, you know, he's laboring through, you know, 50 pitches and in two innings and he's out by the fifth. So it does make sense to rest him right now, even though he's not really injured per se. But at some point, you know, he's been here for quite a few years now. We'd like to think of him as, you know, an up and coming guy, but you know, there's some point where you say, okay, let's see it. He's never pitched 200 innings or close to it yet. This was, should have been the year for that, and that's not going to happen. You know, you can't, they've been calling up guys like Davis Martin, who was not a big prospect. They really don't have much down in the system that can replace these guys. So, it's tough. And, you know, if you go through every area on the team, you could say the same thing. So there's only a handful of guys, I think, Luis being at the head and Dylan Cease, that are probably untouchables at this point.
Maybe I'll spin it positively here, Sully. At least the White Sox and Cubs aren't the Angels. And, of course, I mean, they are wasting yet again possibly the greatest, what we could be witnessing, one of the greatest seasons ever put together by a single player. Shohei Ohtani, of course, currently has 32 home runs. He's leading the league in OPS. And, oh, by the way, he's also one of the best pitchers in the league. I mean, is Artie Moreno really going to have to consider trading him away at the trade deadline?
Well, it would make sense. I mean, if you're not going to re-sign him, and it doesn't sound like they are, you would want to get as much as you could, and he's certainly a guy you could get a lot for, even though he would only be like a rental for a couple months before he's a free agent. So I don't know. I don't know how Artie Moreno thinks. You know, he was going to sell the team before the year and then suddenly changed his mind on that, and so he obviously is an owner that really has shown in the past that he doesn't know what he's doing, and so he'll probably mess it up. Whatever he does, I think we can count on him messing this up.
And look, in a year where the Mets and the Padres have spent a gazillion dollars, they have nothing to show for it this season in the standings. If you're Tom Ricketts and the Ricketts family, and you're a Cub fan, I know it's not the West Coast. It's not as close to Japan. You were a runner-up in the Shohei sweepstakes when he first came here. But you've got to force the conversation. And I don't know how you convince Shohei and his representatives that you're ready to win. Even though, I mean, you have to start by making the money equal, if not better, than what everyone else is offering.
Yeah, I do think they'll make an effort to, you know, put themselves in it. Whether they would go all the way, you know, they could do one of those, you know, how the White Sox are always second place in the free agents to like Machado or whoever. I could see that happening. It's hard for me to imagine Ricketts spending that kind of money since, you know, Dansby Swanson is the biggest expenditures he's had, and even he was like the number four of those big four shortstops last offseason, at least as far as contract-wise. He's been outperforming the other three for sure this year. So I don't know. It doesn't really seem like something he would do. It's something he should consider doing, especially if he wants to, you know, get higher ratings on Marquee and everything. But, you know, the Cubs' attendance is not really that shabby, considering you know, the team hasn't been good for a few years. So maybe he looks at that and says, you know, we can still draw with a team that's, you know, just barely in contention.
I think when Sully mentions the Cubs could finish second, that is, never more did the Ricky Bobby quote ring true in my head when he said, if you're not first, you're last, if you finish second in the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes. But yeah, we appreciate it. Sully, thanks for covering baseball for us here on ESPN 1000 today. We appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
You can read him in the Chicago Tribune. He does a great job, obviously, for a long, long time covering baseball in this city. Paul Sullivan with a lot of excellent insight there.
You want to hear from baseball fans, too, 312-332-3776. Are you paying attention? I mean, here we are going into the All-Star break. Do you find yourself sitting down and watching your entire game, let alone going out? And Sully alluded to it, they would get drawing 33,000 at Wrigley, not 42,000.
Mm-hmm.
But for a team that keeps kind of saying, well, we need a few more weeks to determine if we're in this or not, fans are still showing up. And they do on the north side of town, and fans aren't showing up on the south side of town because the White Sox are usually a prove-it fan base. You know, give me a reason to show up, and I will. But it's really discouraging, and baseball's my favorite sport, and it's really tough for me to consume baseball on either side of town right now.
And also something that is difficult to consume for baseball fans is the Major League Baseball draft. You brought it up with Sullivan there. I want to dive into that a little bit more here in the next segment. The Major League Baseball draft starts tonight on ESPN and the Major League Baseball Network. Rounds 1 and 2 starts at 6 o'clock tonight. The Cubs are picking 13th. The White Sox are picking 15th. And what exactly should we look for in this? We'll talk about it next here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
When, oh, when will the White Sox and Cubs get back to being good at baseball? That, I think, is the question for their fan bases. And yes, sure, the Cubs have been a little bit better this year, but yeah, they're still well under 500. So keep pointing to that run differential. At a certain point, you have to come to grips with the reality of, hey, if we're going to make this team better for the long term, you probably need to sell off your best assets, and that would be Cody Bellinger and Marcus Stroman. And I know Cubs fans don't like to hear that. If you could get a deal done with Stroman, I think it would make sense. But if you're already at a point
where...
you got
to start talking if you're going to get a deal done.
Yeah, clearly that doesn't seem to be the Cubs' intention here. So if you don't have any inclination of making a long-term deal with Stroman, because you wouldn't want to let him... it would be foolish, in my opinion, Bri, to let this get to the point where he becomes a free agent and then you somehow bring him back next year. I mean, again, it's possible, but it seems it's not realistic.
It's not realistic, and the fact that he went public and said on Twitter, people were asking, he's like, well, I'd like to tell you there's something here, but that we haven't talked. And then Jed had to respond to that, and I don't think Jed was too pleased. He said, well, the player made his statement, and we don't do that. And so it'd be great. Trade him, get what you can, turn around, make everyone happy, sign him, bring him back, everyone's happy, kumbaya. It rarely happens that way.
You mentioned the Major League Baseball draft. That's tonight. And for baseball fans, listen, I follow baseball really closely. You follow baseball really closely. And I get into the weeds with baseball. Even I'll admit, though, it is, unless you're somebody who follows college baseball very closely, and even then, you're probably going to be missing out on the high school phenoms who are going to be littered at the top of the draft as well, some of the true impact players. It's really hard to get into the Major League Baseball draft, which is tonight. The Cubs have the 13th pick. The White Sox will have the 15th pick. Starts at 6 o'clock tonight on ESPN and the Major League Baseball Network. Baseball has tried, and they've finally now carved out this particular night, the night before the All-Star game, where they try and make it a more palatable television event, Bri. But the problem is a little bit what the NBA ran into this year. Outside of Victor Wembanyama, you know, it's very hard to know who these players are as they enter the draft. And baseball's even worse because, as you pointed out earlier, we're 3 or 4 years away from most of these players making any sort of impact at the major league level.
Yeah, I don't think Britney Spears is going to be chasing after Colin Houck as he makes his way through the,
Dylan Cruz.
Yeah. Yeah, oops, she did it again. No, it's you can sit here and say, okay, will the Cubs go for pitching? Will they? Who's going to be their first baseman in the future? Do they have a third baseman that they can count on to move forward? And those you can look at the obvious things. And I see the White Sox in mock drafts. They're shortstops, most important position, best athlete usually. You can never have enough shortstops, and you can move them around if Tim Anderson gets back to Tim Anderson form, and he's still a young man. So you can say what their wants and needs are, But it's not like, oh boy, I saw Rhett Lauder, and you can't wait to see the, you know, I watch Wake Forest baseball, and boy, that kid's heater is something else. It's, you know, he brings it 96 to 99 all the time. So it's very tough to figure out what you're going to get and how quickly they're going to get here, if they get here at all.
It's not like football. It's not like basketball. It's not even like hockey with the Hawks and Bedard. Even landing, you know, a player who is thought of as like a generational talent, like pitching prospects, there's the old acronym in baseball, TINSTAP. There is no such thing as a pitching prospect because so frequently their arms are injured and then they're never the same. So even a great pitching prospect, you have to walk that tightrope and hope he can, you know, avoid injury before he gets to the majors. And then even some of the best hitters in college baseball, you know, Chris Bryant lived up to all the hype he could have possibly done, right? And you still see it kind of go sideways as he hits free agency here, where the Cubs didn't even want anything to do with him.
And it
worked out, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not for Chris Bryant. I mean, it's a talk about a guy who had unbelievable first 3, 4 years, 5 years, and then now can't get, I mean, the numbers, the injuries, everything. And remember Carlos Rodon when the White Sox drafted Carlos?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of scouts from other teams said, you know, he pitched a lot of innings in college.
NC State, yep.
Yeah. And they weren't going to touch him. And when he was healthy and when he was good, he was very, very good. And then he wasn't so healthy to the point where the White Sox didn't even qualify him, right? Didn't even want to give him the $17, $18 million to qualify.
Exactly.
He goes out in San Francisco on a prove-it deal. And next thing you know, he's getting paid again. So, yeah, there is no such thing. So all you can do is say, and you're going to hear it from Jed and Rick, well, you know, we can't believe the guy was here, and he was the best athlete available or the best player available, and that's why we took him, because we don't draft for need. But obviously both sides of town has needs, right? The White Sox have needs all over the field. The Cubs don't have enough power.
Uh-huh.
If they're going to lose Stroman, they're going to need more pitching, even though Justin Steele and Kyle Hendricks and, you know, I don't know what you have in Drew Smyly here. Sometimes he looks like he's going to be fine. Other times he looks like
he's a great number 4 or 5 starter for
you.
If Drew Smyly is your starter. Well, either Rick Hahn or Jed Hoyer will tell us tomorrow, we can't believe Oliver Moore fell to us in the draft. We were trying to trade up for him. We will get back to some baseball. I also want to talk about another highly drafted White Sox player who I'm unsure of at this point what his career outlook is going to be. But before we do that, let's get back to Northwestern football. Adam Rittenberg, an alum of Northwestern, joins us next to talk about what exactly the future holds for Pat Fitzgerald. We'll do that right here on Mellor and Hanley on ESPN 1000.